Murphy.
How do you spell your name? With an F or a PH?
PH.
Why?
Yes.
And you are PHY. What's the question?
Dick
Richard. Dick Richard Murphy. Mm-hmm. Well, cut back to the question of your experience. What are you about to say?
This has been very recent, so it's a...
Yes.
But last week at the Jackson State riots, as we were...
Well, Jackson State what? State College?
At the State College, yeah.
Yes.
As we heard that the situation on Lynn Street was had been growing since about 5 o'clock. Gilbert and I went up to try to report a story, and this time we were both we were there for about 15 minutes. Gilbert was taking pictures. I was asking questions.
You were talking with the students?
Not actually with students. This was after most of the students had gone. There was a time actually in between the major demonstrations and at a time when there was pretty much just the frustration on Lynn Street with people. From the pool halls, from the cafes, the pool halls. There are some
restaurants.
Yeah. Who had been collecting without knowing anything more about the situation than we knew. And we watched the emotions as they gradually, as they were being built up, but at about 15 minutes after our arrival, we were dispersed, I guess is the word, by six policemen with carrying shotguns, and who used the butts of the shotguns quite freely in dispersing us.
Are leaving scars on both of you?
Yeah.
Is that the only episode?
I guess we both been once or twice and asked what we were doing in Jackson and held up for while we had to give some kind of explanation. Even this experience becomes strange because I think we both should have realized that the crowds were disorganized, that the situation was out of hand and was likely to lead to just this kind of meaningless violence.
Suppose the police had left the crowd on the street. They might have interfered. What then? Could you guess?
No, I can't. On the other hand, I know that the police tactics that I saw were not designed so much to disperse as to pick out from the crowd. Anyone whom they thought represented an organization an organization that had been working to bring some sort of change to Mississippi.
You mean it was knocking off the leaders, an excuse to knock off leaders? That was the idea, is that it?
When we were dispersed, I'll put it this way, when we were dispersed, we were well behind the front lines of the crowds. In other words, the police came from the side and around to where we were standing. So that it was not done to establish clear lines of demarcation between the place where a crowd could be or could not be.
We talk about the stereotype of the Negro created by the white man. What about stereotype of white man created by Negro? Beg pardon? In general. As a general, I don't mean within the movement, I mean in general now. What stereotype of the white man has been created by the Negro? We know, of course, that the stereotype of the Negro created by the white man contains many contradictions.
Well,
and maybe the other way, true of the other two.
Well, within the movement, I know you find whites characterized, and these are liberals. I think mostly you find the, of course there's bound to be a certain amount of, some amount of stereotype.
Excuse me a second, I just want to be sure that we're in business here.
Like the characterization of Southern people, at least by the movement. I can only look at it through the eyes of the movement at this point of the Southern cop, the ignorant, and the big Southern old cowboy-like cop with his guns hanging down. And I mean, this itself, and the fact that he's ignorant and stupid, and he says, I hate the Negroes and that sort of thing. That type of stereotyping, the contradiction should come when you realize that this guy can't... that he loves his children, and he loves his children, and there's some love in his life somewhere. He's capable of some tender emotions, and he's capable of some rationality. Matter of fact, and that itself, the fact that you realize that, also comes the incomprehensibility of the fact that he actually does hates Negroes. The stereotype of the Southern white, the white who comes to work in the movement is the... you see, generally, this is incrimination, actually. But the whites aren't very helpful in the initial part of the movement, because one thing they impair a great deal of the effectiveness.
How?
By being white and working in the community itself. The Negroes mistrust them, and this certainly attracts police attention. To you, if you're working in a small community on voter registration, and along coinciding with this is the awareness of a Negro, I suppose, that this is his fight, which means that it has to be mostly him, that he has to work in this alone. But there's a stereotype of the white who works in the movement who sort of assimilates the Negro culture, so to speak, culture in quotation marks, who feels that he has to, I can't really speak about this. This is a,
please do.
He has to take over some of the Negro roots in order to feel some sort of identification.
He tries to, you mean?
Yeah. He says, he uses things that he identifies with Negroness. Also, he uses slang and whatever dance craze the Negroes are. However, about at the moment, he assimilates or absorbs. Of course, this is... you see, they're working at odds with the newfound identification of a great many Negroes who feel that there is something positive about their history and they approach with mistrust any white who tries to who take even that in French. Langston Hughes says they took our blues and they done took our blues and they done took our blues and done gone. That's what Langston Hughes says, and what that means is that even this white who's come down to help, if he starts to even take over things that I now consider to be my lapinage of negritude, then there's a certain little animosity that might develop. How can I explain that? Of course, that's that type of stereotype with the eager liberal, the guy who pats you on the back, who's avid about civil rights, who wants to help, has existed for me for quite a while. The whites who were so eager to get to know you because you're a Negro or find you a very curious thing. I think that's stereotype to a lot. But I think there's a realization that's happening. I've been reading bitter articles of an awareness. This is mostly from New York about the white liberals. Negroes have found out that these white liberals with whom they plotted in dark rooms at night really don't want to take the final step, which somehow is means to them some sort of amalgamation of races, or really aren't...
Means to whom amalgamation of races?
The white liberal. Really isn't willing to... comes down to the obvious breaking down, which is the integration of schools, of fair housing.
You mean the northern liberal is fine as long as he's doing it for Mississippi?
Well, that's a great deal, too. We find a lot of absolution of guilt.
He doesn't want it around his own... So, bailiwick.
Yeah, whatever.
No, maybe part of this stereotyping is made by the situation itself, or by white people coming down here, in that coming to Mississippi represents their total political involvement, and the reason it does so is because the move is a violent transplanting. It means that you come into a state and for the first time in your life, politics is going to actually have a direct effect on the way you move and eat and walk and the people with whom you can talk to and assemble with. I think at first, there comes a knowledge of having learned a good deal, and yet I think this has too to be tempered by the fact that you've entered a state that is drastically far behind other states. That finally there is very little. In terms of political subtlety to understand here, there's almost nothing to understand. It's all going in one direction, or pretty much so.
What about this remark that's sometimes made, that a percentage, sometimes given as high, sometimes as low, relatively low, of the people you're talking about who move in, say, Mississippi to help, whites, the joiners, you see, the activists, have a stripe of emotional instability. This usually represents some sort of a skew emotional need of one kind or another. This is sometimes said. I've heard Negroes say it, and I've heard Citizens Council people say it. I've heard it said in all tones of voice, you see. Does that make any sense? Or is that not your impression?
Either. Not my impression.
Not your impression?
No. There are different ways of looking at it. It seems... I would say that the Negroes who join the movement, who come down, or the Negroes who join it here, are askew, emotionally disturbed, sociologically. And we find hoodlums joining the movement, in the sense the people who... the bus riders, the freedom riders, when I first came down to meet them, when I met them here, I was surprised to find out how many people who would not ordinarily be hanging out in the streets in Cleveland, let's say, were involved in fighting for freedom. In other words, I didn't find a core of intellectuals actually discussing and planning out, mapping out what was going on. I was surprised and disappointed to a great extent. That was a year and a half ago, 2 years ago when I first came down. You can look at it in two ways. A person trying to find himself, realize himself through some sort of commitment, through some sort of struggle, not necessarily through a cause, simply trying to determine himself, can be said to be askew emotionally. And if he finds...
There are degrees, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm not talking... Yeah, I'm talking about that this is a normal disturbance. That, and if it's backed by an honest and a sincere attempt at, self-evaluation as you progress, as you work in the movement, if you find things here that you can do that help realize who you are, then this is a... Then this would seem to be the path of struggle that everybody should finally go through and try to achieve. That this,
it corresponds to the basic human experience anywhere.
Yes, that this emotional disturbance can't be set aside, it can't be made different from the paths and struggles of a whatever, someone to, you know, do something in the world. What? I don't know, it seems to me that the people who come down here, and I would emphasize the Negroes who come here, are in fact the most determined and intelligent. The majority of the Negroes who come here from the North are the ones who are the high echelon of thought in America, of thought, who represent no emotional instability at all, who simply, well, and I would say that the whites who come down here have to be on the same level, who realize that something needs to be done and who are willing to sacrifice and to work towards whatever the coming, the second coming.
Well, would you make a comparison between the abolitionists of the 50s and the present white liberal on that basis? Would you say it was the same thing or different?
I really don't know. Go ahead.
No, if I can get back to the thing that I was trying to say before.
Please.
I think for the white liberal coming here and the transplanting, unless... I think there is something wrong if that person bolsters himself with the knowledge of political involvement and with the knowledge of the immediacy of what he has learned.
Is something wrong if he does that?
Yeah, I think, well, perhaps not wrong with the person, but I think there would be something that's going to be wrong if this continues to exist. In other words, there's a need for an approach, I think, that says, yes, certainly political involvement is immediate here, but it has to reflect back to the North and back to the complexities, back to our own background. And until the time that it reflects to the situation that we have known or that we haven't really seen before in our own towns.
Yes.
Then something is wrong here.
That is, it becomes mere Phariseeism and self-indulgence then. Is that the idea? Unless it's seen as a national picture rather than a sectional picture.
Because in other words, a Negro coming here has acquaintance already with racial problems and the need for racial solutions. A white person coming here could or could not, and I think in many cases has not. And there's been a failure to look first in the North before coming to the South. I think this just is, but that the majority of people coming here have not looked at their own communities in the North. The change has to come with their being able to reflect back.
Do you think that the realization of this as a national problem will take some of the heat off the Southern resistance, take some of the heat out of the Southern resistance, will lower it? As once you have it generally known here that the problem is not specifically Southern, but it's a national problem, an international problem. That will take some resistance out of the Southerner?
Yes, I do. I think so long as it's not simply a point of resistance, but it's also a strategy of Southern politicians to use the idea of outside agitation and the idea of problems in northern communities that are really worse, but that nobody is doing anything about.
You mean Southern politicians say this?
Yes.
But now, once the facts are generally known in the South, would it lead to another interpretation, too, that Southerners who now feel themselves special and call it a special problem, a special resistance, would have a resistance lowered when they realized that it was a national problem? First, you're going to have politicians who are going to exploit this fact and say, stay away because you have your own problems, solve you before you bother us. That's said all the time. But when the realization becomes more general and the information becomes more, and the facts become more acute, you see, you have more New York, more Cleveland, more this and all that, that the heat of the Southern resistance will be diminished as more Southern resistance is really a national problem, that we don't have to feel that we're just stuck with it in our own special way. They can feel part of a national situation about it rather than a special, cut off, and at the end of the thing of scorn, you see. You see what I'm getting at? I'm not putting it very well.
What you're restating what he said, I think, rather than giving him a question some way.
Well, is this what you were meaning there? Put it that way.
Yeah, I mean that if the regional confinement can break down, I think if Southerners could possibly see themselves as part of an awakening that's occurring all over the nation, that certainly resistance would break down.
And you think this will be brought about, or perhaps promoted at least, by the realization of a growing problem in the North?
Yes.
You think so?
How it is operated, it seems to me, we were discussing this before, was that the movement, the present-day movement of the direct action started in the South. And only when it started in the South did direct action actually break out in the North. And so it seems that that the awakening was directly from the whatever the civil rights activities that happened in the South, and now people in the northern communities are realizing certain discrepancies in the way they live, and hopefully Chicago, there will be more Chicagos and more Clevelands and even more Chapel Hill, which had always regarded itself as a liberal community, and so that And so that what he said, that we'll recognize that this is a national awakening here and that this will reduce a great deal of the resistance, or at least more Southerners will not be able to use this as a point of resistance, and secondly, they will be forced to follow the examples of the solutions that will be much quicker in northern cities, I think. At least the verbal discussions that would be much... Well, go ahead.
By the simple token of reporting racial demonstrations in the North, there is bound, I think, to be an awakening of the resources that a community could employ for improved race relations.
In the South?
Yes.
I've heard it said, since I've been in Jackson, as a matter of fact, and earlier in New Orleans, Negroes criticizing the leadership in both Atlanta lately and Chapel Hill as being ill-advised, ill-planned, and confused.
Well,
does that make any sense to you?
I'm not at all well informed on the situation.
One argument being this, that Chapel Hill had 80% integration. Why not negotiate the way out instead of building a drama?
Because, well, if you put it that way.
That's the way one person put it to me.
Oh.
A very well-informed Negro who's very active in civil rights. He says that's what is true or not. I don't know.
Certainly they've tried negotiations with both races.
Chapel Hill?
Yes, in Chapel Hill and Atlanta. Perhaps I think that, and in Atlanta I know for sure that the demonstration was sponsored by Smith. I think it is time now that the time has come in these places that whether it has 80% integration or not, to not accept the lesser of two evils. And I think the demonstrations in Atlanta are proper. It brought up a great deal of the contradiction of them being a liberal city, of that being a liberal city, and the fact that all these things weren't done. And Atlanta had been coasting for a long time on a liberal reputation that it had. And it only took people who were not afraid, weren't guarded by the status quo, which is chained. The majority of Atlanta Negroes, the Negroes who are able to do things, are simply chained by the fact that they're enmeshed in the economics and politics of Atlanta. And it took people outside of that system itself in order to bring into the mainstream of society, as I said before, the contradictions that Atlanta had. And I think they were proper. I think that all of the revolution will be confused, and I don't think they were ill-advised. In fact, I think this.
Some of your friends think differently.
I know a lot of the friends think differently. The whole bit, Negro leadership, is beautiful, fine. This is the only way we can ever approach any sort of solution is by this criticism, this dialectic, I suppose. Why not? The majority of Negroes, I think, are afraid of direct action, of SNCC, of the piercing clarity with which SNCC approaches the problem, the radical approach, the clear, direct approach, which I am for, which I agree with.
What's your affiliation, if any? What's your affiliation, SNCC or CORE, or do you have any?
None at all? No. I would be more likely to think of myself as SNCC than any one of those others.
Let me shift ground right quick to something else. How much anti-Semitism do you all detect among Negroes, either in the movement or among people outside of it and simply naive, uneducated people? How much do you find? It's very strong in some places, in some strata of society.
In the movement, I don't find it at all.
The NAACP official in Philadelphia last year had quite a run-in with the national office on that basis, you remember. He made a speech.
Yes.
I forget his name.
Fuller. Was that not last year?
The year before then.
I know
where it was. Well, he's a local secretary or some such post, you see, or maybe a local president in Philadelphia. And he made a scathing anti-Semitic speech and then wouldn't take it back either. He got rebuked in the home office. It's not uncommon.
Well, I don't know if even...
How much I don't know, though, you say.
I think the Negroes here, I don't even think are aware of anti-Semitic assimilative.
Here you mean in Mississippi?
As such, as a definite sort of institutionalized prejudice. I don't think they're even aware of the image. Even the Negroes in Cleveland, the ones that I grew up with, talked about hunkies and jewels, money and all that sort of thing. But as far as it being a definite, you know, something that could be characteristic, I don't think they were aware of it.
Of course, in Harlem, so much of the property is owned by Jews, the landlords and liquor store owners and the other stores, the business is largely in the hands of Jews, of course. I don't think I've read the percentage is very high.
Yeah. Well, right.
Yes, it takes many forms.
Let me tell you before you
please,
go.
Please.
What I think the importance of SNCC and the importance
yes,
of direct
please.
Action is. It's based on the fact that each individual is of great deal importance, that an individual element inside can cause a change. And based on self-assertion, up until, let's say, last month, there were only 40 SNCC workers in Mississippi. It's in and out, 40 SNCC workers have organized, and of course, with the help of, I'm not saying SNCC itself, I think the NAACP and all the other organizations that have existed here. But they've caused national attention. They've brought national attention to Mississippi. 40 people in this whole state individually have, say, turned the state upside down, at least in the social arena. And the whole importance of it, of the direct action, and this is why I think it's propaganda in favor of thinking, rather than just a regular propaganda or a religious propaganda, is the importance of the individual, is the, that's the whole genesis of the thing. I just think that it's the most modern in the view of, modern sensibilities, and the most direct and unequivocal approach that we have, and the racial situation, and the civil rights situation. And I think that it is the one then that will encompass poverty and the economic situation that has the universality to encompass the problems that they have of American culture in general, to talk about it.
Sad to relate, I've got to get a car and get on the road before 4:30. Okay. Go to Jackson by 7:30. To Clarksville by 7:30. I should like nothing better than staying on with this.
I would like to tell you about the theater.
Please do tell me a little bit about it before I go.
Okay.
Will you?
I will. I want to tell you about it because it's
I wish
an important
you would.
Thing. In the South, we have a Negro audience. In Mississippi, we have half of the population concentrated here. We have a chance, or the artist has a chance to involve the Negroes in a ritual, as you say the Muslims do, to involve them perhaps in a ritual that is in favor of thinking. And I say this because it's a term that stops my thinking, from reading Brecht, who talks about take nothing for granted. And if you take nothing for granted, therefore, nothing will seem unalterable or inalterable. And art has a direct relationship with this, because art seems to be the science of of alteration, of transformation, and which has been stifled here. any possibility of change, the right of innovation and the right of change, the right to, or the ability, the capacity of the possibility of change, and a theater here. Theater particularly, because on the stage you can show the different situations. You can show how the reality, in quotes reality, can be transformed and changed. We have there's a chance here to show, to show this on stage, thereby making the people, or having the people understand that perhaps reality, or what they've been accustomed to as reality, is changeable. And second, it's the collective religious phenomenon that we have, the ritual that we can involve them in as theater is concerned. By using the unique experience of the Southern Negro here, by by collecting all his anxieties, let's say, and presenting them on stage, we can perhaps provide a direction that is certainly much more beneficial, I think, than the direction that Muslimism or religion, because it's a direction that implies responsibility and self-assertion. And the theater was conceived on in theory out of those lines. As a matter of fact, it's mostly theory. What I want to do with it.
Your theater, you mean?
My theory, yeah. What I want to do with it. Matter of fact, I've only gotten to the point that I'm working with the students, and we're presenting different things. I'll say we're improvising so that we can free them from normal cliches as far as acting is concerned. But mostly, hopefully, we can, from them, from these people that I work with here, we can perhaps create a unique style, a unique line of presentation that is unique, that is as unique as jazz or the blues, supposedly. But this one not built out of despair. This built out of actual responsibility. And people, one person said that you're talking about play therapy and not play acting or whatever. And this is true. I'm using this with a very limited knowledge of what I'm supposed to have, I suppose, sociology, as a play therapy sort of thing. But if I can get the actors, if I can influence the actors to finally get off that stage or get on the stage and say that I alone am responsible for what happened in between the hours of 2 and 3, the way I acted, and if I can get the audience, if I can transfer this, that they alone are responsible, and that they alone, and they are of importance, the least little thing about them is important, well, I think all this can be accomplished by the actual presentation of realities, alteration. So that's the theory that underlies the theater. The fact is that we have no material. That's one point. I've denounced almost the majority of plays that have been written up to this point because they've been
written for this.
Written for, let's say, Negro plays, written about Negroes or by whites or Negroes, but mostly represented in a white audience. Only until Pearly Victorious have we even heard of a Negro audience in New York supporting a play, and this is what went on. And because the plays were written within a white, necessarily, sociological framework, not necessarily assimilationist sociological framework, I don't know exactly what's the distinguishing line. Except that they were written to be seen and to participate in and to be seen spectated by, let's say, a sophisticated white audience or a white audience, period. And I think that the direction should be reversed, that we should write for the Negroes, which in turn can be understood and will be understood and will have meaning to whites and Negroes, that if we turn towards the Negro audience here and write for the maids and write for the write for the cotton hall workers and write for, in other words, theater has a chance now to be something other than a bourgeois activity.
How does this relate to or compare with the proletarian drama and the proletarian novel and poem of the 30s?
I guess it doesn't. I guess it doesn't really differ.
It doesn't differ.
I guess it doesn't accept that I'm not trying to, when you speak of proletarian, I'm not trying to really inculcate a dogma. I'm not trying to preach a dogma here.
Yes, there was a dogma involved there, of course.
Yeah, I'm only trying to, I would only be trying to stimulate thinking.
Yes.
In itself might be a dogma. In itself I might be, distort. All I want to do is, for the first time, I think it should be done, present the anxieties and the problems of the Negro on stage, and therefore the universality and the unanimity of the Negro problems will be, the unanimity and universality of the Negro problems will be shown, etc. And linking and having the Negro audience understand them on those terms. That's
a fascinating prospect.
Yeah.
I'd like to see some of your plays and that.
So,
yes, I can imagine.